Hello, and welcome to the Lives of Women in History. My name is April Rogers.
Hello, and welcome back. Today, I want to depart from some of the women that we typically discuss in our individual biography series and take a look at a Native American woman, Sarah Winnemucca. I think you'll find her story interesting. I also find it important. And I think I'm going to start covering many, many more Native American women as well as women of color. I think it's important that we hear their stories. So it's 1878, and Sarah Winnemucca is brooding over all these abandoned houses that she's seeing along a dusty track of road. So just 3 days before, she and a small group of people had left the John Day Valley in the Eastern Oregon Territory. They were on their way to Silver City, Idaho, and that's where Sarah would drop off her passengers that she was guiding along before she headed to Elko, Nevada. Once there, she intended to board a train and go to Washington, D.C. She was going to attempt to tell President Rutherford B. Hayes about her people. She wanted him to know that they were starving and that the Indian agents were crooked, and none of the promises to the Paiute had been kept. It was June 8th, and just 3 days after the war was reported in the Enterprise, a newspaper of the area, Sarah was unknowingly heading straight for the heart of the battle. Quote, "We saw houses standing all along the road without anybody living in them," end quote. Sarah later wrote this in her book, Life Among the Paiute. On June 12th, she meets Paiute Joe on the road, and from him, she learns some very dreadful news. Quote, "He said the Bannock Indians were just killing everything that came in their way, and he told us to get to a place called Stonehouse. That was the first I heard that the Bannocks were on the warpath," end quote. From him, she also learned that there was no one the Bannocks would love to kill more than Chief Winnemucca's daughter. So when the Bannock War broke out, Sarah Winnemucca was 34 years old. She was the daughter of the highly respected Paiute Chief Winnemucca and the granddaughter of Old Chief Truckee, who first met Captain John Fremont and his explorers and guided them over the Sierra Mountains. Now, Truckee had for years considered white people the long-lost brothers of Indians, and he always counseled peace despite increasing violence by the white settlers against his people and their outright theft of the Paiute lands in the Nevada Territory. Now, it looked like the Paiutes were going to be caught in a vice between their northern neighbors in Idaho and Oregon, the Bannock Indians, and the increasing number of settlers that were pushing them out of their tribal lands in Nevada. Also known as the Snake Indians, the Bannocks were superb horsemen. They were tall and lean. They would dress in fringed buckskin decorated with quills and scalps and red and yellow and black paint, and they would wear a single eagle feather or a headdress made of trimmed horsetail or porcupine skin. Their enemies actually considered them the most savage and bloodthirsty of all the Indians west of the Mississippi, but they had been relatively peaceful until now. And now they were being driven to rebellion. Now, according to the Territorial Enterprise, on June 11th, 1878, General O.O. Howard, says the government has not kept faith with the Bannocks, and General Crook believes they have been starved into insurrection. So back to June 12, 1878, Major Edwin Mason, he is attached to General Howard's command. He wrote to his wife from Boise, Idaho, that military forces were quickly crushing the Bannocks. Quote, "We are of the opinion that it is only a big spree among the Indians that a month's good work will knock the bottom out of it," end quote. Now, Mason headed cheerfully down the trail from Boise, about 80 miles as the crow flies, according to Sarah, and Sarah's small group and Paiute Joe, they galloped into Stonehouse, just over the border in eastern Oregon. They were accompanied by around 20 scouts, and Joe was reportedly explaining the situation. In his words, quote, "The Bannocks are all out fighting. They're killing everything and everybody, Indians and whites, and I and two of my people went with these men to South Mountain to fight them. And we came to Buffalo Horn's camp and had a fight with them," end quote. Even though he was wounded, Paiute Joe had managed to kill Buffalo Horn, and then he jumped on his horse and escaped. Now, instantly, plans were dropped by Sarah to go to Washington, D.C. She was hoping instead to aid a peace effort. She offered her services as an interpreter to the army, and the offer was greeted with great suspicion. They were really suspicious of her. Citizens at Stonehouse actually believed her wagon was loaded with ammunition intended for the Bannocks. Even the soldiers who arrived with Captain Reuben Bernard, quote, "looked at me as if I were some fearful beast," end quote, according to Sarah. So she would spend the night locked inside the hotel while citizens armed with rifles actually watched the wagon. Then the next morning, she demanded Bernard search it. In her own words, quote, "go and see for yourself, Captain. And if you find anything in my wagon besides a knife and a fork and a pair of scissors, I will give you my head for your football," end quote. Well, as upset as she was, she made her point, and Bernard believed her and realized that Sarah could be an asset to the army. Now, even though she was only about 5 feet tall, she rode a horse as well as any man, even when seated side saddle. When she wished to show she was a lady, she was way better at riding a horse than many men. Her training as a youngster actually included a stint in a California school, as well as residence in the household of a Nevada family, where she was taught to read and write. And that training was put to good use at Mahler Reservation, where her people had been removed. She then had been fired from her job and banished for reporting the Indian agent's theft of blankets and the starvation rations that he was providing to her people. The trials and others had motivated her now aborted attempts to seek justice in Washington. Sarah waited to hear the latest news of the war. A dispatch finally arrived at Stonehouse from Camp McDermott, and Sarah volunteered to take the news to Sheep Ranch, which was about 30 miles away. She went in a riding habit and riding side saddle, along with a small escort. Sarah galloped across the sage-covered hills. Now, when they neared the encampment, they actually saw a man on the road ahead, and they believed the natives meant to attack. The man first ran, and then he turned to shoot. Luckily, Sarah and her party were able to reach Sheep Ranch safely. And once there, she was asked to get the Paiute with her to carry a message to Camp Harney, or the Mehr agency to discover the whereabouts of the Bannock. So this request was actually greeted with some uneasiness, and along with it came some more bad news from Pipe Joe. Quote, "Sarah, we will do anything we can for the officers and you. We will go with dispatches anywhere but to the hostile Bannocks. We cannot go to them, for Sarah, you don't know what a danger that is." End quote. So Sarah actually knew if the Indians accepted this mission, they might be easily killed. Then a stunning revelation from the scouts came. Quote, "Sarah, your brother, Natchez, was killed or is dead." End quote. So now she had a fear that this news could possibly be true. And she told Captain Bernard that she would do her very best to accomplish the mission, even if she had to do it alone. Bernard wrote a letter of safe passage, quote, "To all good citizens of the country, Sarah Winnemucca, with two of her people, goes with the dispatch to her father. If her horses should give out, help her all you can." End quote. Now, again, according to the Territorial Enterprise, on June 13, 1877, an article ran that said, "It is now conceded that the uprising is almost universal among the Bannocks, and that all the military forces of the Division of the Pacific will be required to subdue the savages." So two men went with Sarah, and off they rode toward the crossing of the Owy River. They struck the Bannock Trail about a mile beyond the crossing. Again, we have a comment that Sarah made. Quote, "We followed it down the river as much as 15 miles, and then we came to the place where they had camped, and where they had been weeping, and where they had cut their hair. So we knew that it was hereabout that Buffalo Horn had been killed." End quote. So they were trying to think about the fate of her brother, Natchez. And Sarah continued on the trail. She had to know what happened. They rode for a very long time. Hard day. They didn't stop to rest at all, and the country was pretty rocky. There was no water, so they traveled about 50 miles that day. When it started getting dark, they rode on. It was pretty difficult to travel fast. Their horses in this area, because it was so rocky, almost fell over several times. Now, two men and Sarah actually stopped for the night. Sarah and the two men with her stopped for the night. They ate a little hard bread with no water, probably hard tack, which I can't even begin to imagine how difficult that must have been to eat. For those who do not know, hard tack is a form of bread, kind of like a cracker maybe, but way harder. It's made of flour, salt, and water, and then it's a mixture that's been around for hundreds of years. Colonial people ate it well before then. It just travels easy without molding. And generally, you soak it in water or broth, sometimes, you know, coffee, whatever you have. And that makes it easier to eat. So I can't even begin to imagine how they were able to eat that hard tack without water even. But once they were finished with their meal, Sarah laid down to sleep, but was kept awake when the horse that she tethered to her arm kept pulling on the reins. Now, at dawn, they were off again across the barren valley. They were headed for a ranch where there would be water and food, and from a distance, they saw smoke. The house was still smoldering. It had been burned to the ground. So, they made coffee in a scorched tin can, and Sarah refused to kill and eat any of the loose chickens. They belonged to the absent rancher, so she was not going to do it. She respected people and animals too much. the men actually considered themselves under her command, and she determined to continue on the trail of the natives headed toward Stearns. So the men considered themselves as being under her command, and she was determined that they continue on the trail of the natives and head toward Steens Mountain, which is in southwest Oregon. It was about 60 miles to the nearest settlement. So on June 14, 1878, according again to the Silver City, Idaho Enterprise, there is general joy here at the prospect of General Crook coming to take a hand in putting down the Indian Rebellion. He is very popular in Idaho. 10 whites have thus far been killed by the Bannocks. So on that same day, riding across the barren, the sage-covered hillside, Sarah actually unexpectedly met Lee, who was another one of her brothers. Quote, "The minute he rode up, he jumped from his horse and took me in his arms," end quote. Sarah actually wrote that Lee said their father, Chief Winnemucca, and their people were prisoners of the Bannocks, who had taken their few guns and all of their horses. Quote, "Have you brought us some good news?" end quote, Lee asked. And then he realized everyone was in danger as they stood there talking. He realized that the Bannocks were out in the mountains looking out. He told her to take off her hat and her dress, unbraid her hair, and put a blanket around her, so if they could come down, they would not know who she was. So all three of them disguised themselves as Bannocks, even though that put them in danger from the military and the settlers. They actually were better off in this situation than they would have been. Sarah asked for the location of her father, and she still had the message from General Howard to deliver to him. I mean, she needed to get this message there. Lee, quote, "Oh, dear sister, you will be killed if you go there, for our brother Natchez made his escape 3 days ago," end quote. So she was delighted to hear that her brother was alive. Thank goodness. And Sarah didn't hurry. Sarah didn't hurry, even though she rode straight into grave danger. According to her, she needed to save her father and his people, even if she lost her life trying to do it. So they climbed a steep mountain. Sometimes they had to do this on their hands and knees. But once they reached the top, they could look down to the Bannock encampment. And it actually was a thrilling but terrifying sight. They were seeing about 327 lodges, around 425 warriors, and they were in a valley. The place kind of looked like it was all live and filled with hostile Bannocks, according to the writings of Sarah. And she said that she began to feel a little bit afraid. However, Sarah concocted a plan to get inside the camp. She was going to warn Chief Winnemucca and the other Paiutes from the Malheur Agency, get them all the way to the promised safety of General Howard's troops. So she raced down the mountain under as much cover as she could find. They then infiltrated the Bannock camp. They snuck into the tents of the Paiute prisoners. And later, they put Sarah's plan into play. Just kind of hung out and hid for a while. So while the Bannocks were busy butchering cattle for an evening feast, the women left the lodges as together would. And then they disappeared. So the men slipped out one by one until only Sarah, her father, Lee, and some Winnemucca cousins remained in the lodge. Then darkness fell, and they too managed to slip away. Now, they were fearful of being discovered, So they hurried away from the encampment. Sarah had accomplished her purpose. Her strength finally wavered. In her words, quote, "It was like a dream. I could not get along at all. I almost fell down at every step. My father dragging me along. Oh, how my heart jumped when I heard a noise nearby." End quote. The noise was her sister-in-law, Maddie. She was hiding in the brush with a horse. So once they reunited, the small group left the mountain and met the other Paiutes at Juniper Lake. This is where the women were cooking a mountain sheep, cached there the day before when Sarah and the two men had come down the mountain. Eating on the run, they rode all night. They finally reached Summit Springs. Now, Sarah could barely lay down to rest. When an alarm sounded. A man arrived. His horse was nearly foundering under him, but he came to give the warning. The Bannock were right behind. The messenger said, "I looked back. I saw Lee running and then firing at him. I think he is killed." Oates, the Bannock chief, is at the head of this. He said he heard him say to the Bannocks, quote, "Go quickly, bring Sarah's head and her father's too. I will show Sarah who I am," end quote. So on June 15th, the next morning, Sarah and Maddie, they separated from the family. They rode their horses toward General Howard, at least 75 miles away, going over rough, dry country. Chief Winnemucca and his band, they remained behind to try to save Lee and the others. So her father had asked Sarah to tell Howard to send soldiers to protest the Paiutes who had refused to go to war. So around 1 o'clock, Sarah and Maddie finally reached Muddy Creek. And this is where they watered their horses. They ate some white currants that they found growing on the bank. And at around 3 o'clock, they reached the crossing at Owyhee River, where this is where people gave them coffee and had bread while fresh horses were saddled. Quote, "We jumped on our horses again, and I tell you, we made our time count going 15 miles to the sheep ranch. We whipped our horses every step of the way until we were met by the officers." End quote. Now, they did encounter some disbelief, but General Howard finally ordered a force of men to go meet Chief Winnemucca and bring him in. He said that this was the hardest work that I ever did for the government in all my life. The whole round trip from 10 o'clock, June 13th, up to June 15th, arriving back at 5:30 p.m., having been in the saddle night and day, distance about 223 miles. So on Sunday morning, June 16th, General Howard asked Sarah to join him as interpreter and guide, and she agreed. But she was mad as could be because she wanted to turn around and go after the Bannocks who had imprisoned her family. Now, General Howard gave general field orders from Sheep Ranch. He directed all the forces available to go toward Dean's Mountain. Quote, "The enemy is reported in large force. The columns will move with usual military precautions to scout the country and avoid ambushes." With Captain Bernard's forces, Sarah and Maddie acted as scouts. They traveled toward Camp Lion, and from there they went on to Miller City. And before they reached the town, news came on June 19th that the Bannocks had abandoned Steens Mountain for Harney Valley, and Captain Bernard was hard on their pony's back. Captain Bernard was hard on their trail. Now, later in that evening, General Howard and Lieutenant Wilkerson, they came to Sarah again and asked Sarah what she thought about going. And again, she agreed to carry a dispatch to Bernard, despite the danger from both the frightened settlers and the raiding Indians. So, along with a couple of soldiers, she was escorted. She had an escort of a couple of soldiers, and they set out on the morning of June 20th for Camp Harney, which was around 120 miles away. Now, the small party did not stop to eat until dark, and then they traveled all night long. They arrived at Camp Harney at around 10 o'clock in the morning, and she was tired. Maddie went straight to bed without anything to eat. When they finally awoke, they learned that Captain Bernard had finally engaged the enemy. In Silver City on June 27th, the Enterprise reads, "In the recent attack of Captain Bernard's command upon the hostile forces, the force of the latter is said to have been 1,000 warriors. The Indians were not aware of the presence of the soldiers, and their stock was unguarded." Bernard addressed his troops, informing them that they were very close by enemy and could whip them. He charged them not to retreat, as if they did, they would be shot, and they might as well die by shots fired by the savages as by their own men. Now, around 1 o'clock in the morning on June 24th, Bernard had chased the Bannocks around 10 miles, and General Howard arrived later with other troops. So Sarah and Maddie, they followed, and again, they went as guides and interpreters. Now, at one point, the volunteers saw what they thought was a large force of natives up on the hills, but Sarah disagreed. She said there was no danger. Finally, when the troops scaled the heights, they discovered exactly what Sarah had said would be there: rocks piled to look like people waiting to conduct an ambush. So on the 29th of June, high in the mountains, where it snowed all day, the cavalry pursued the Bannocks down the canyon of the John Day River, while General Howard and his wagons lumbered behind. They would slip and slide down the steep slopes, but continuing the march, General Howard's forces reached Pilot Rock on the Camas Prairie. They studied the terrain, and Sarah explained that the hostile Indians were in the perfect position for a quick escape. But no one would listen to her. Again, she was right. Major Edwin Mason told his wife in a letter dated July 8th, quote, "We had a lively fight today. I have rarely seen men handled in a better style. They moved to the attack without a moment's hesitation, firing as they advanced, leading their horses up the steep and rocky hill without a particle of cover, for the country is treeless. Now, Mason went on to praise Bernard's expertise. However, the Bannock escaped into the forest at their backs, and as Sarah had predicted, however, the Bannocks escaped into the forest behind their backs, just like Sarah had predicted. Quote, "I knew they would go into the timber and get away, and this I told the general, but he would not believe it." End quote. Now, he also didn't believe when she said the Bannocks would double back through the Blue Mountains to the Mahler Agency. But that was exactly what they did, and General Howard was soon bogged down in the most treacherous terrain possible. That canyon route that they were following was 1,200 feet deep, nearly perpendicular with the North Fork of the John Day River, thundering at the bottom. They slid down the trail to the riverbank. They crossed the rushing stream. Then they climbed the opposite side, leading their horses. This ascent was so steep that several of their pack animals actually fell over backwards into the stream and were lost. One skirmish resulted in the death of a courier by a different band of natives led by Chief Hamali. Now, this happened on July 17th. In Baker City, Oregon, Chief Homley, with his band of Indians, fought hostiles on the 15th instant, killing Chief Egan and have his scalp and head. So Sarah saw the most fearful thing during that summer's campaign. She saw Chief Egan, who was not one for war, and she saw him shamefully murdered by Umatilla Indians. He was cut in pieces by them, his head taken to the officers, and Dr. Fitzgerald boiled it to get the scalp to keep. Sarah mentioned the atrocities that she saw in her book, but she always returned to the tale of her march with the army. So she and Maddie, they accompanied General Forsythe on a rambling 150-mile circuit. They would pick up small parties of hostiles along the way. When they finally neared Camp McDermott, Sarah felt this strong pull of family. She finally talked Forsythe into letting her leave. She tried to convince him to let her go alone, but he insisted that she take three men. So around 6 o'clock in the evening, they finally left. They rode all night long, and just at daybreak, Sarah raced ahead to the camp where she found her brother, Natchez, and her father, who held her with tears running down his face. Quote, "Oh, my poor child, I thought I would never see you, for the paper said you were killed by the Bannings," end quote. Now, through August, the war was raged on, but it was just about over. Sarah had made long, hot rides for General Howard, who commanded her loyalty. Howard ordered all the Paiutes at the Malheur to the Yakima Reservation in Washington. So it's behind the Columbia River. And that's far from Winnemucca's original land in northern Nevada. So for the first time, Sarah actually disobeyed orders. Instead of rounding up Indians to bring back to the camp, she warned them away. It was too little and far too late. So in December 1878, Sarah and her people, they began the 350-mile trek to Yakima. Screaming women and children were unwilling to march, were tossed into wagons. Men shackled by chains walked through snow. By February 2nd, 1879, they finally arrived in Yakima, where they were quartered in a cattle shed. The snow was waist deep. The Yakima people resented the Paiutes, stole their horses, threatened the children. And the Indian agent described the Paiutes as some of the most destitute of any he had seen, some being literally naked, but he did very little more than pray for them. Now, as Sarah's people died in these harsh conditions, she was filled with grief. Once more, she was persuaded to act on their behalf. So she began lecturing on traditions of her people and speaking eloquently of the conditions that they were now enduring, doing all of this to earn money. Sarah raised money for another journey to Washington, D.C., the trip to tell the president of her people's troubles that had been interrupted by the news of the Bannock uprising was now going to resume. It was the winter of 1879-1880, and Sarah traveled with her father to the nation's capital. There, she met with President Hayes and secured promises of better treatment for her people, promises that were easily broken. They were assured that they could return at their own expense to Malheur Reservation. But in 1881, unfortunately, permission to depart was denied by the Yakima agent, James H. Wilbur. They called him the Blue Sky Agent. He looked toward heaven and prayed while the Paiute's blankets were stolen right off of their sleeping forms. Quote, knowing the temper of the people through whom they must pass, still smarting from the barbarities of war 2 years previous, and that the Paiutes, utterly destitute of everything, must subsist themselves on their route by pillage, I refused permission for them to depart. End quote. This was Wilbur's report. Many of the Paiutes still remained at the Yakima Reservation. 5 years later, they were unable to get the money or permission to leave. Despite the betrayal, after betrayal, after betrayal, for the rest of her life, Sarah worked for her people. She married a man named William Hopkins, but later divorced. She lectured across the nation. She started a school for Indian children. She wrote the first book ever penned by a Native woman, Life Among the Paiutes, Their Wrongs and Claims. It was published first in 1883. The original editor of the book, Mary Peabody Mann, actually noted that Sarah's speeches were extraordinarily moving, but it was her goal to set down in writing the full story. Quote, it is the first outbreak of the American Indian in human literature, and it has a single aim, to tell the truth as it lies in the heart of a true patriot, and one whose knowledge of the two races gives her an opportunity of comparing them justly. In the Bozeman Chronicle, on October 28, 1891, an article was published, Sarah Winnemucca, The Death of a Noted Indian Woman, with a sketch of her somewhat interesting life. Sarah Winnemucca Hopkins, well known in this country, after eating a hearty meal on Friday the 16th, suddenly expired in great pain. This was at Henry's Lake, 120 miles away from the Bozeman, and almost as far away from a doctor. As a result, the nature of the disease which carried this notable woman away is not and may never be known.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of Lives of Women in History. If you enjoyed listening, please consider sharing with friends and family and leaving a review. See you next week.